Right, our first speaker today is Ferial Haffagy. Ferial Haffagy is a South African editor and journalist. She is currently associate editor at the Daily Maverick. She's a regular analyst and commentator on radio, television, and elsewhere, is a member of the Aspen Global Leadership Network, and a member of the Africa Leadership Institute Fellowship. She's on the board of the Open Society's Program for Independent Journalism, and has won numerous awards for journalism and for her support of media freedom. This includes receiving an International Press Freedom Hero Award and ASPA's Phil Weber Award in 2013, the global company's highest internal honor. She has served on the boards of the World Editors Forum and the Global Editors Network, and in 2017 was awarded an honorary doctorate from the University of Free State for her journalism. Thank you, Ferial, for joining us, and we look forward to hearing what you have to share.
Good morning. It's so lovely to be here with all of you today. Please help me understand, actuaries, what's the risk of sitting in the front row? I was waiting for company. Okay, so I thought I might start today. It's something I've been trying to do for a while now, to find 10 good things in the news every day. Sometimes difficult, but let's see if you can play along with me. So I read yesterday that Nedbank Capital Project, its Capital Projects database showed that there's an 800 billion rand pipeline for the first half of 2024. That's up from 193 billion rand for all of 2023. As we know, we haven't had load shedding for 4 months, and for me that's been the biggest good news story of 2024. Ace Magashule's PA has been extradited from the US to be tried soon, and the ANC is finally to act against Malusi Gigaba and David Mashlobo, amongst others. For me, the biggest news of the week is that Joburg's hapless mayor has been axed, finally. As somebody who loves the city, that was a very big moment. And Transnet will, by September, open access to important rail corridors. There's also some stability settling in there. The Africa Growth and Opportunities Act's been saved, and finally the Investigating Directorate is building some muscle. It's hiring in some big guns like Matthew Chaskelson, Paul Pretorius, etc. And then Home Affairs has really been the story post-election for me. That takes me to 9, and I wonder if you could share a 10th good thing with me that perhaps has struck you recently. Anything? Do you agree with me? I would call it you. To see a room like you all, still in Johannesburg, professionals completely change room from ones that I've spoken at before, I would think that I'd call that number 10. And every day I try and do these 10 things, and I can always find them in our country. I see some of you shaking your heads, but I hope to convince you by showing you where I think we're at the moment. So we have a government of national unity now. It's comprised of 7 different parties, and I'd argue that it was a good outcome from this election. So it looks. These are our cabinet ministers. Yes, I know that it's pretty big, but I think what's becoming quite clear to me right now is that we're already beginning to see the outliers in this cabinet. I'll point you to a few of them. There's the Hosienso Ramakgopa, the Minister of Electricity. For the first time, we don't have a difficult energy setup where power is dispersed across 3 different ministries. For now, it's concentrated in the hands of one minister, and I'd argue that he's doing a good job. I was watching earlier up on the screens there, the basic education minister, Siviwe Gwarube, is surely a story of our new political landscape. 32 years old and already beginning to crack up the education portfolio, show that she's going to bring good things there. Showed you him. Where's the other good guy? Leon Schreiber, 35 years old, really doing interesting things at Home Affairs. He's promised to clear the visa backlog, 604,000 backlog by December. He's made the Zimbabwe exemption permits. He's begun to crack that difficult thing. He's really someone who you've already seen working. The Senzo Mkunu, the police minister up there, I think a breath of fresh air after Beckett Cele's reign. We haven't seen crime coming down at all. It's way too soon. But I do think that you're seeing signals that are quite important. Who else? Gaetan McKenzie, what's your view? Every time I look, he's doing something else, either interesting or jaw-dropping. But I have to tell you that quite a few of my friends have said to me, hey, Faye, how can we go and work for this guy? And that's really, really surprised me. And then finally, Parks Tau, the Trade and Industry Minister, who already went off to the US, I think has secured some commitments on AGOA, so showing us what they can do. Also, I must say, Pieter Groenewald has been welcomed at prisons as the new minister. And then Barbara Creasy saying that she's going to fix road accident fund, beginning to deal with all the big transport issues we have. So what I wanted to show you there is that you're beginning to see the outliers and a very, very healthy competition in our GNU. Here's where things get a little tougher and very expensive. The price of a government of national unity is that you have this huge executive. 44 deputy ministers is completely unprecedented, not only in our country, but in the world. For me, that's going to be difficult. I don't know what they all do. I'm not sure I don't even know who they all are. And when I ask friends and family or colleagues, could you tell me the deputy minister of this or that, they really can't. So this is the price of unity. So these were our election results. And I do think that we've just come through a shape-shifting election. For the ANC to get 40.2% and for me to have witnessed at the results centre the absolute shock on the faces of Gwede Mantashe, Nomvula Mokonyane and the other people at the ANC desk there, they were surprised by this result. They did expect it to be better, but I'm going to show you why nobody really did well here. This one is the more important one for us to look at. I'm sure if we did a little poll here, most of us in this room would have voted. Would that be right? I guess so. But this tells us that this is something we really need to look at. Our voter turnout is very, very low. If you look in 1994, 87% of people who'd registered turned out to vote. By 1999, you're getting up to 89%. So we're still very keen on elections. It stays pretty high. What happens in that 6 years is state capture really begins to grip us. You feel services going down, complete loss of trust. We enter an era of grand corruption, and people just turn away from the ballot box as a place where they might solve all these problems. 23 million South Africans who could have turned out to vote didn't. And for me, this is where we should focus all our attention because there are largely young people who don't see change in formal political representation. So I said to my young colleagues, as we always do after an election, let's draw up the winners and the losers here. So who are the big winners? And actually, if you look at this picture, there aren't any big winners here. Obviously, the ANC is the big loser. The DA's Helen Zille said, we are the only party to have made gains, but it's a 1 percentage point gain. It hardly grew at all. The big winner then is really just MK, which comes from nowhere and eats right into the EFF vote. I believe that at 12, Floyd Shivambu is going to say that he's not renewing his membership of the EFF. So this is partly an outcome of what happened at the elections. These are the three places where power was most contested, and this is how they ended. So obviously, nationally, we get our government of national unity. In KZN, even though MK got the highest number of votes, it doesn't form a government. And in Gauteng, the ANC is going it alone and has decided to form a minority government. So here where we live, things are still in the balance of how it's going to work. I'm quite keen on what Panyaza Lusufi is going to say in his State of the Province address today. And this I thought you may be interested in, because what it shows is there was very deep attention given to the form of power sharing that our country should have. The one was a very formal coalition, and while Helen Ziller and others have been saying what we have now is an ANC-DA government, in fact it's not. That would have required a much more formal arrangement and a merging of identities. We don't have that one. The second was this confidence and supply agreement, where one party keeps the executive and the other holds the key positions in parliament. It balances that. It's a check on the abuse of power. And this was very, very popular. It's not the one we ended up going for. And I believe people are looking at Canada and Turkey as working examples quite closely. This one's very important to look at, because scenarios 5A and B, where the ANC allied with the EFF and the IFP, or with the EFF and the Patriotic Alliance, they were very, very popular options within the governing party. Many people felt that this was a better fit for the ANC, and that the tie-up with the DA was certainly not a very, very well-supported majority option. I still think that at some point we could end up here if relations fray very badly and if that GNU falls apart. So this is just something I've drawn up to look at. Why? How did our president do, and how might he do better in this term? So I do think that you have to give him a win on energy reforms. Most of us, when I spoke before the elections, I'd asked the question, do you believe load shedding will be back the day after the elections? And 99% of the hands shot up, as I think it would have done here. People believe that that was being gerrymandered. I think now some trust, is it settling in with you that maybe this is a reform that could sustain? I think the energy reforms were coming through quite well. The National Prosecuting Authority reform, also very important. The establishment of the investigating directorate has been vital. I know there's some news today that the law hasn't yet been signed, difficulties hiring people. But when I speak to the ID, it's certainly beginning to feel like it's going to be more robust. The one I just want to go to finally, so SARS has been reformed very well under Commissioner Ed Kiesewetter, very painfully, perhaps for us, would you agree? I'm not sure, but it certainly is for me. What is our president not so good at? Let's start at the bottom. He really underestimated his popularity for many years. Because he was so absorbed by the fights in the ANC, he didn't realize that there was a whole country outside of it saying, come on, let's get going, let's get this country of ours moving forward. He failed at intelligence reform, and I don't think that our intelligence services are yet sufficiently fixed for us to take comfort from, still work to do. He kept on Arthur Fraser as the prison's boss, and we know what happened there. Jacob Zuma was sprung from jail too soon, and then we saw many, but maybe that's a good news story, actually. And then he was an irresolute leader. He's really going to have to show us what he can do, because by my calculations, he has about 1,000 or by now maybe 970 days left in office. So this was, I thought, a very good matrix of possibilities of where our country could end up, developed by Professor Mil Soko, Greg Mills, and also Ray Hartley. And it showed you what the best option coming out of an election might be, a multi-party coalition of the center, the broad center, not centrist, but one where a coalition that could hold together and move the country forward. What they call the median option was a narrow ANC victory, and that you'd see more of the same where we were for the past 5 years, sort of muddling along. The bad option for them was an ANC-EFF tie-up with the ANC support in the low 40s. To be honest with you, I was briefing and firmly believed that we were going to end up with the red option there. A radical coalition, because everything I was covering in Gauteng, where I chose to do most of my reporting, suggested that that's where we'd be. In fact, we end up in the good quadrant. And people who visited before and after say that there's been a lightening of atmosphere in South Africa. Would you agree with that? I think that we all can. How did we get there is something I hope to take you through. So this is, I just put in here to show that these were what the poll showed us. And while there was a lot of talk that you can't believe opinion polls because they don't paint a true picture, the ANC said it was going to come out at well above 50. The DA believed it would get 33%. The EFF thought it was going to be the government. In fact, the polls were quite good. Huh? So this one, I think, is really an important slide I want to spend a bit of time on. The Indlulamiti scenarios done by the MISTRA organization puts a whole lot of data together to come up with words that describe the mood of South Africans. Granted, this was before the election, and I think that the mood, the words by which people describe how they're feeling would have changed a lot. This really broke my heart when I first saw it, because the biggest word which described us was disappointed. It wasn't angry or insurrectionist about to undertake a socialist revolution, not at all. It was that South Africans had had so much hope, they believed things would get better, but they didn't really. So look too at hopeless, dissatisfied, it's a disgrace. The hopeful words, happy, etc., much, much smaller. So this one just goes back to how our president didn't realize how popular he was. Even until the eve of the elections in the latest polls showed up that President Cyril Ramaphosa is by a long shot still South Africa's most popular leader. The DA didn't do that well because he doesn't have a likability factor. And people often ask me why that is. I do think it's chemistry. I couldn't tell you in any rational political way. It's just, do people dig him? Not so much. Julius Malema, you can see why there's going to be this big press conference at 12. The EFF is self-immolating a little bit. Is because the EFF's hit a ceiling. And this graph does show you why. He's almost as much feared as he is loved. And that may be a good thing in Machiavellian terms. It didn't really work politically because he hit that ceiling there. You can also see why Action SA is floundering at the moment. It's not quite sure. Should it stay out? Should it come in? It's chosen to be in opposition nationally. In Johannesburg, it wants to be part of the council. It's also because Herman Mashaba probably overestimated a little bit how popular he is. Musi, the same story. The RMB chairperson, Roger Jardine, a lot of money put into his Change Starts Now party. He sees this outcome and then drops out of the race. You can see Gayton McKenzie, he's going to have to do a lot of that online exercising every day and all the things he's been doing, because he's not that well regarded, even though he probably thinks he's the most popular guy in South Africa. So these are really important, because I'd always assumed when we were still in the teeth of hard load shedding that would be the number one issue driving the election. In fact, not at all. I'd also thought corruption would be much higher up. It's joblessness. And it is so for even working people, because you know the number of dependents who each one of us who works has to support. So it comes up across communities, not only jobless people, as the single biggest factor. Some numbers I think it was day before yesterday, we still are not turning that curve. Obviously, it takes longer, but that has to be the number one priority of our new government of national unity. Cost of living comes second, and that's because of very high administrative prices. I don't know how many of you are feeling the costs of electricity and water, but it's significant, and I'm looking forward to what you say, Fahmida, on where we go with energy. But those are driving a real cost of living crisis, the cost of water, electricity, food prices beginning to temper a little bit, but certainly that's the biggest. Crime, so Senzo Mkunu's got his work cut out for him. Load shedding's off that now, but what you do see rising is water shedding. I've just completed some work on Joburg, looking at the past 5 months of water cuts, and I couldn't believe what I've seen. Every month, at least 1,000 or more water cuts across the city. So what I think we're beginning to see here is proper water shedding, cutting places to supply others, and we have to keep our eye on that, because for me, it could be, it's even worse. You know that we can make do without electricity. When I've gone out reporting, people say, I really can't do without water. These are places like Claremont, the west of Joburg, many parts of Soweto, where people often don't have water for days and days. My mom, who lives in Mayfair, is often without water. They mostly get their water from a borehole now. So this is a rising crisis, is one as active citizens we have to keep our eyes on. So I get to know this guy, our Deputy President Paul Mashatile. Why is that? Because in about under 1,000 days' time now, the ANC holds its next national conference. I think you can bet that he's going to be president of the ANC. As soon as that happens, President Ramaphosa becomes a lame duck president, and then his ascendancy is almost secured. So get to know what his policies are, what he believes in. I don't think you'd have seen an ANC DA tie up under him. I think he's a guy who more supports this kind of alliances. So this was the beginnings of quite a radical alliance. Juju over there, Carl Niao still in that. He's now joined the EFF, of course. You also see there some of the small parties who now form the opposition with MK in parliament. So I thought that's where we're going to go to. And so MK, let's talk about this a little bit. Jacob Zuma is really, I think that picture so exemplifies everything about him. Quite cheeky. Completely owned the story of the election, came from nowhere, but not really from nowhere. So that T-shirt tells you a story. MK isn't a party that only started in December last year. If you look at all their swag, their caps, their membership books, how very well organized they were in Gauteng, in KZN, and also a little bit in the Free State, this was a party that was long, long, long in the planning. Where does it get its money from? There's old Louis Liebenberg, the diamond dealer. So I think you're seeing lots of pots of money coming into MK. There would be that kind of Liebenberg access. There's some Russian money coming in there. I think there's leftover money from Dubai coming into the party. So it very much becomes the story of 2024, the MK party. What's it going to do? It's got a big caucus at parliament. It now is the official opposition. So MK is what the DA was a couple of months ago. John Schlope is who John Steenhuisen was a couple of months ago. So very different parliament there. It looks to me, though, that MK is immolating very, very quickly. You'd have seen that they kicked out 13 MPs to bring in new MPs. And if you read like the Sunday World or watch YouTube, etc., the internecine or their internal faction fighting is so big that they could flame out even more quickly than Cope did. You remember Cope being the big breakaway from the ANC. So I call this path We Dare Not Linger, because it's from President Ramaphosa's first, from his inauguration speech, and obviously it comes from Nelson Mandela's Long Walk to Freedom speech, which says we can pause a while, but we dare not linger for too long because there's so much work to be done. And how we're choosing to do that work has captured the imagination of the world. The Economist, which is no great friend of South Africa, or of Africa, you'll remember their Lost Continent cover of a few years ago. They actually, on the day that we created our government of national unity, They put out a very good report saying this offers a way of power sharing that the world can emulate and look at. It only took 12 days for us to come up with our government of national unity and get it signed, and we should probably pat ourselves on the back for that. Rolf Meyer, one of the architects of the first government of national unity and also a behind-the-scenes mover and shaker of this one, told me that he was taking this model to Sudan, to Somalia, to the DRC, even to parts of America where he does a lot of peacemaking and conflict resolution work. I thought that was really interesting. So how did we get here? I want to speak for a little bit about the power of our institutions. Because when we consider the robustness of South Africa's democracy and how we got to where we are, which is a fairly good outcome if you look at other elections around the world, is because we've built really, really strong institutions, constitutional institutions. I watched the IEC on the night before the election results were released. Former President Jacob Zuma came in there. He said, "Don't provoke me. Don't you dare release those results." And these commissioners said, "No, we have a timetable. We're going to release them." And that had an effect that things continued. The spoiler tactics weren't allowed to work. The second one I want to look at here is not the presidency as an institution, but the guy on your left. Certainly my hero, the Chief Justice Raymond Zondo, who throughout the telling of the election results, the first sitting, he just kept things on track. He insisted that it goes ahead. He displayed all the characteristics I watched in 3.5 years when he ran the Zondo Commission. And I'm happy to take questions about why I still believe it was an essential commission for our country and for our democracy. Parliament is suddenly going to be an institution of proper debate, a house of the people. It's already showing itself to be much more muscular and much more interesting than it was before. That is just how it was established. Some pictures from the day where that statement of intent was first signed. That's President Ramaphosa signing it. And that's Juju, who put his hand up to be president. He didn't succeed, and why I enjoyed this is he was laughing, you know. There was an acceptance of the outcome, healthy competition. That's Annelie Lotriet, the deputy speaker. And then here's where I want to linger a little. Because I think what's been most exciting for me, and it is Women's Month after all, is the number of young women who put up their hands to represent us. Like Ayanda Ali from Bosa, Hasia Hassan from the ANC, the youngest MPL ever, now gone to National Parliament. I think we're going to be really well served by the Speaker, Toko Didiza, a firm pair of hands in charge of a very important institution, that's Parliament. And then, this one's exciting, because you're such a young room of people. Look how much younger politics is getting. Before, it used to skew there. Now, suddenly, see what's happened. And that surely should bring a dynamism, an excitement to political representation. This is just my own institution I wanted to highlight. I think the media is vital to our DNA. That was media people quizzing John Steenhuisen on that same day. Then the power of good leaders. So who got us here? This is the ANC chief negotiator, Phoebe Potgieter. A really quiet woman. You can't get her to say anything about herself, to do a profile. She's the absolute quintessential backroom leader who pushes processes forward. Helen does say a lot about herself. But also the DA chief negotiator, the person who helped get this deal across the table, indefatigable politician, and very important role she played. Mbax Fikile Mbalula of the ANC, from the time I watched him accepting those results and saying at the National Results Center, "We hear you, we hear what South Africans are saying to us," I thought that he displayed good leadership. Andre Snell, Deputy Justice Minister, and also one of the people who helped us, Tony Leon, the former leader of the opposition, quite key to striking that statement of intent, and then Ryan Coetzee, I don't know if you still remember him, but a very good political strategist now working in the UK. So what I wanted to also speak about is something that we don't often enough tally into our understanding of what makes South Africa work, and that's the power of our soft power. That's the intangibles of how a nation is regarded. And how do you get to that? Well, people love coming here. So tourism is back to almost pre-COVID numbers. The Kruger was so full last year that Ike Pashla told me it was at about 110%. Neighboring Mpumalanga really benefited. And then Cape Town had its most bumper season ever last year. I think it's going to clock up even higher numbers this year because of all the international flights landing there. There's also this. Around our continent last year, I was aghast to see all the anti-queer bills being passed everywhere, from Uganda, Tanzania, Nigeria. It was like this wave of assault on the other migrants, on queer people. I thought this guy was the face of hate. You're seeing it around the world, not only on our continent. And then here's South Africa. This is what we know. This is what our constitution entreats us to do. It's to draw in people from other places, to draw in communities who may be marginalized elsewhere. It's such a standard, like gay pride parades are completely standard, loved by all, watched by all, part of who we are. And it's just an example of that soft power bequeathed to us by our constitution, so important to how we see ourselves. Another one, you know this better than me, we are the world's leader in business process outsourcing, that's call centers. This is the Waterberg, Airbnb started training guides there. And how does our future look? Our constitutional court is a bulwark. Our judiciary is truly independent. At the end of this month, we get a new Chief Justice, Mandisa Maya. This is fabulous. She is if you look at her work at the Supreme Court of Appeals, the nature of her judgments, what she's regarded for, we are really passing the mantle from Chief Justice Zondo to Mandisa Maya with some aplomb and elegance. There's also this, so who's put in solar? Anybody? Yeah, quite a few of us. We've taken a lot of that pressure off the grid, and I think that every week when I read the engineering news daily or I read most media, you really are seeing a real energy revolution happening everywhere. I tell the story often. In the Northern Cape the other week, they put out a statement saying, we're really sorry about the traffic. And I was thinking, what traffic? It's the Northern Cape. All these wind farms, they're carrying these very, lots of, they're carrying all these, what do you call them, the pylons, blades, the really long blades. So they're causing an unusual and a happy traffic problem for Northern Cape. You're seeing a real, so people like this, Zanele Mbata, I'm so happy to say it's a woman-led revolution that's happening there. Zanele works in hydrogen energy. There's Fumani Mtembi of Pele Energy Group. She's doing excellent work, Northern Cape, Western Cape. Really visionary development thinker of how energy can be used to spur development. This was a stat that I hope I'm going to be able to take out of my presentations going forward. It just showed you the impact of Transnet's failings on the economy, and then this shows it really viscerally. These are the coal trucks trying to get into Richards Bay. Massive problem. I was listening to Michelle Phillips at a PSG seminar yesterday. She's the CEO of Transnet. Slowly, slowly, it's getting fixed there as well. Huh? The ships at port numbers are coming down, so the waiting times are coming down. Like I said, by September, they begin to open up access to key parts of the rail network. And just here, again, is a story of a woman who might be so key to how our country is being fixed. Shamila Batoy, do you agree with me here? NPA boss? Doing her work, getting prosecutions up. Most people I speak to say, no, no ways, orange overalls, I'm not buying that. But if you look at the fixing of the structures of the NPA, it's beginning to happen. What I find gratifying when I look at their WhatsApp group is the numbers of major judgments they're securing, especially in GBV. So femicide, abuse of woman, that's her personal passion area. And then I do think we're going to start to see proper anti-corruption prosecutions happening. Pindile Baleni, again like Phoebe Potgieter, not somebody who likes the media, but this Director General in the Presidency is drawing up the medium-term development plan, which I think is going to see better things for our country. Like I've said, Siviwe, and then these are the women of the NPA. There's Shamila Batoy, Omar Rasataba. The AFU has secured 8 billion rand in asset forfeitures, and Andrea Johnson of the ID hiding away behind there. And then also our soft power, I hope you can hear this one nicely.
Fuming Trump. I know these comments about immigrants were upsetting to some people, but for me as an African, there's just something familiar about Trump that makes me feel at home.
The influx of illegal migrants, crime, unfair business practices, drugs. It is also not true that all foreign nationals are involved in criminal activities. There are some who are, but not all of them.
I love how we all waited like, oh, he's not so,
So I mean, people who love Trevor Noah, and he seemed to like come from Bolt from the Blue in the U.S., but he's so quintessentially South African and funny. And if you read Born a Crime, you can see again part of that soft power in the world. There's this, we are very funny. I just loved how potholes got painted. And then I'll skip through this quickly. It's just to show what holds our country together is like 300, 350,000 civil society organizations, NPOs. We probably know Gift of the Givers best, but Gift of the Givers is part of an ecosystem of care, people like this woman and people like Outa. So our civil society is a massive part of what keeps our country on track, sort of. It loses its way sometimes. But civil society is what keeps hunger from the door. It keeps us stable. And for me, is the container of our greatest hopes. So these are just some pictures from just to show you the road we must walk. This was when I was reporting on before the elections. This was Cosmo City, a new city in Gauteng, in Joburg. And it's just looking like a mess. It hasn't been well maintained. So the maintenance of infrastructure, really big. This is behind our library in Joburg, which hasn't been open for 3 years now. Local government elections going to be very important. This was a protest at the library, and that's the poor Mfuleni Library. No love at all there. So really big work in the next 2 years. But just to end finally on the most current aspect of our soft power, did you see that Tyler made Barack Obama's must-listen summer hits list?
Oh my, what the heck? What? Oh my gosh, guys.
Thank you very much. That's it from me. I'm happy to take any questions. We still have a little while, and I would truly love to hear what makes you curious. Huh? Are there any?
Thanks so much, Feriel. That was super interesting. I was a little skeptical about what I was going to gain from your presentation this morning, but that was awesome. That was really really great to hear. Great to hear the analysis and the positive sides as well.
Thank you.
You spoke about how potentially an ANC EFF, and some people even talking, the DA lovely and delicately puts it, a doomsday coalition with the MKP, that in some ways it may have been a more comfortable alliance. I've also seen analysis that suggested that a big part of the ANC's fall is what they're reaping from the lack of effective government, and that a continued ineffective government, say an ANC EFF or whatever, would actually be the death knell for the ANC the next election, because by that stage they would have disintegrated.
Yes.
I want to get your take on what you think about that analysis as actuaries, we're supposed to be long-term thinking. So thinking not just about sort of this election and this year, but how the next 5, the next 10 years might play out.
Happily. Thank you very much for that and for listening, despite your skepticism. I appreciate it. So I'm going to publish next week a really interesting interview I had with Helen Ziller. She says what she thinks will happen is that no party in the future will get above 50%. The ANC still believes it can. I think its slide, like most liberation movements, has started, and the trajectory is quite clear. And that comes from a paper by Joel Nechitenze, who is one of the foremost intellectuals in the ANC. He says its trajectory is perfectly clear. Unless it doesn't take radical action to get that up, it probably isn't going to win another election. And I think that's correct. What will best serve our country is if we have a new party of the center. So Roger Jardine, formerly of RMB, he thought that Change Starts Now would aggrandize all these different good constitutionalists together into one party much too early, as the failure of that showed. And that I do think Helen and some people in the ANC won't come out as publicly as her, agree that that's what needs to happen. You need, by 2029, a new party. So this week I've been covering Joburg exhaustively. And it was so interesting to go to their regional office in Johannesburg and see that they haven't smelt the coffee at all. They are still going for an ANC, EFF, small party tie-up, because the patronage networks, the self-interest is so big that they can't see that actually, while the ANC got 40% nationally, in Gauteng it got 34%. We are that upset with them. And people live in cities, so they're going to lose, and they're going to lose here. So that's where I think things are going to head in short to medium term.
Thanks for your fascinating presentation. I think you've probably touched on my question a little bit, but the Deputy Minister of Finance has spoken through the priorities of Phase 2 of Operation Vulindlela, and local municipalities is supposed to be one of the new focus areas, right? And Phase 1 of OV had quick wins, right? Big projects and quick wins. How long do you think it's going to take for a difference to start emerging in the fixing of the local municipalities? Because that's really where the rubber hits the road, right? That's where Astral, you know, needs to get the water, and, you know, why we had that court judgment a little while back. How long is it before we're going to feel a difference and those, you know, those pictures start to look better?
Thank you very much. So Operation Vulindlela, do you all know it? It sits in the presidency. It's headed by a guy called Rudy Dix, and its political head is the Deputy Finance Minister, David Masondo. It works in three pillars so far: energy, logistics, crime, and corruption. And they've added a fourth now, which is local government, because that's the big thing hampering growth. I think it's going to take a good year for it to happen. So what's happened in eThekwini, which is perhaps the worst of the metros, is they've flown in an intervention team and used the constitutional provisions which allow the national government to virtually take over a metro. And I think that's what needs to happen in Joburg now. They don't realize how deeply damaged the city is, and Gauteng is still responsible for 35% of GDP. I think we're a good year away from a fix. And those of us who live here must really be the most active citizens and make a lot of noise, because without it, you're just going to see some more of this CADA deployment onto City Power, Joburg Water, Pick It Up boards, and that's what causes the decline in services. But thank you for the question, Fahmida.
We have a question from Riyadh online to say, do you think the MK party has a cap on the proportion of votes won in the future? Or are they a possible ruling party in future?
So if you ask the MK party, they believe that they won. That's why the former President Zuma tried to stop the release of the results. They went to court as well, and they lost hopelessly against the IEC at the Constitutional Court. So there is a matter of perception, and then there's fact. They play disinformation tropes, as we saw in the lead up to the elections and after. They are the masters of using social media. The flip side of that coin, though, is they believe popularity on social media equals popularity in the real world. And that's why they fell apart so badly. My own bet is that they will not become a governing party just because they're exploding imploding so quickly. But I may be betting my own desires rather than facts. I can't see how they become a governing party. I don't think any party is going to get above 50% in the next two elections, at least.
We've seen in certain nations like Italy, where national unity governments are broken down. They break down very quickly.
Yes.
So you mentioned now that if the GNU breaks down, there might be affiliations with them. With other smaller parties. Now, specifically, do you think that those relationships will break down to the extent that we'll have to have a midterm election? We've seen it now in the last four years in the UK and other countries. Do you think that is a plausible result?
I pray not. I hope that the parties, their own well-being in the local government election, the key parties to it, which is about three of them, rests on government improving its performance. So there's a kind of they have to make it work to ensure their own futures. So I hope that the more constructive minds are going to dominate, and the people who want it to fail are not going to. It could very well happen. And that paper I saw from Joel Netshitenze already began to plot what would that look like. So if that happened tomorrow, what you'd have is a 50-50. 50% inside, 50% outside. It's a very raw plotting, but we'd have a much more tenuously balanced and unstable country. And I hope that the wiser minds who got us into the right side of that axis are the ones which prevail. Otherwise, I think we're in much unsteadier times or turbulent waters.
We have another question at the back.
And so it was really interesting to hear the good news side, because what struck me when I arrived was that the election adverts were so negative. To fix the country, we need to, South Africa's broken. And I would say that's probably true for every country. I don't think it's broken. Obviously, you know, there is a journey and there's somewhere to go. So I just want to say thank you for the good news stories. I think that was really interesting.
Thank you very much. It's great that you came back.
My question is if you have any comments on the national health insurance. And obviously there was some movement before the elections. Was that just to kind of get additional support as a last kind of Hail Mary? And what are your thoughts on how that's going to progress?
So I found that such an enormously cynical moment, the signing of that NHA bill into law. Because I think the President, Cyril Ramaphosa, knew that our health system is nowhere near ready for the radical changes that an NHI will bring. What's happened now is that it's been kicked into touch, it's been put into those processes, those Operation Vulindlela processes, as an area for negotiation. And business is playing quite hardball. I saw yesterday that they've refused to sign a health compact with government by which they would begin to help refurbish the public hospitals. So I think we're about 7 to 10 years away from even seeing implementation. You'll also remember that there's been one whopping judgment out already saying that the NHI can't be implemented right now as per the law. So I think it's we're headed for a period of, to call it politely, a lack of clarity about health policy. What I have to say, though, as someone who started doing a book on this, is that the status quo is perfectly unsustainable. Either the cost of private medical aid or the state of our public system. So as a country, we're going to have to find a better way of securing our health. That's just my view.
Thank you, Ferial. I just wanted to find out your views around the state of the media in the country. We've seen Media 24 closing down a few print editions. Do you think there's a risk that we run as a country of losing the media impartiality? Some would say we've already lost it in the future with the concentration of funding and where that source will be coming from for the media.
Thank you very much for the media question. You know, I used to be the editor of City Press before. And to hear that it will print its final edition at the end of September is perfectly heartbreaking, along with the others. Due to sustained pressure from the public, Naspers, which is very, very rich, is going to keep on the 66 journalists who were going to be retrenched. But I do think there is a real danger of the diversity of our media being strangled. The good news story is the SABC has really been successfully transformed along with SARS. So it holds the public broadcaster is something of high esteem. It's the private parts that worry me. And specifically that what used to be regarded as the gems of the black media, like Sunday Times, City Press, Drum Magazine, those are all in dire straits. And as a country, as an industry, it's something to which we must really pay attention, because you don't want to lose that diversity of opinion, diversity of voice, and also something that in the end holds us together. And our media has to have credibility, because it's one of those core institutions that keeps South Africa going, if not always on the right track. Certainly keeps it going. Thank you.
Thanks. Also happy to hear a question about media, and I hope that questioner and many of us are subscribing to at least one service, whether it's Daily Maverick or News Report or something, to provide a little bit of funding, because it's very easy to get all the free news and complain about the adverts and do nothing about it. My actual question, Peril, my second question, Jacob Zuma has incredible charisma, and it's an uncanny parallel to Trump. More than just what we saw there, the hard done by, persecuted, everything's against him. But how much of the MKP and the potential future of the MKP is in fact due to Zuma?
What's the last bit of the question?
How much of the future of the MKP, and maybe even the current, is Jacob Zuma's daughter, Zila Zuma, her role there?
Sure. Certainly a very charismatic leader. In my experience, easier to talk to than, say, President Ramaphosa. More press conferences in his time than I've seen now. So a more open presidency he ran. Sadly, in my opinion, again, a completely corrupt one. I was horrified by sitting at the Zondo Commission to see what I learned. I don't think Duduzile Zuma is a factor at all. I watched during the July 2021 riots. She's certainly a factor on social media. In real life, I don't think that you're going to see a dynastic politics where she replaces a dad. Already that fighting won't allow that to happen. Huh? Also, I wasn't sure with that TikTok of hers where she said it was 9 amazing years of her dad. I didn't agree with that.
Any further questions?
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be with you.